and it's Steve Tasker who has been all over the field.
Kind of unique. He was kind of a dual role player for you.
Steve.
A balloon.
Steve. A blimp. We're not even in the stratosphere of normalcy.
All right, let's rip it up, baby. It's One Bills Live here on a Wednesday. Chris Brown with you, flying solo once again. So, looking to you for some commentary, some answers to our Twitter question, which we'll get to in just a second. Finally, the rain has moved out, although I guess more is coming in here in Western New York. Man, yesterday was a soaker. I came home, I had potted plants that were like filled to the brim with water, and my wife was out of town, so I was, you know, I had to be on the watering of the plants, because if she comes home and stuff's wilted, I'm going to hear about it. I didn't have to worry about it. Just put them out in the rain. That was good as gold. But, you know, I just hope we can soak up as many good summer days as possible, because the training camp ticker, it's already started for me. I know I had Josh Reed in here from WIVB-TV, our broadcast partner, Channel 4 here in Buffalo, doing the show with me Monday. And we were talking about how our summers are abbreviated because of training camp. And, you know, you kind of always have that in the back of your mind. By the time you get to the 4th of July, it's already like the major countdown is on, but it's already sitting in the back of my head, especially knowing the Bills are probably going to be starting training camp a hair sooner than they normally do, knowing they have the kickoff game on September 8th. They're not going to be playing 3 days later like everybody else. So they could technically start even a little bit earlier than they normally do because of the fact that they have that game 3 days earlier than everybody else on the schedule. Ton of NFL news and notes coming our way here. And you've probably heard this already, but the Broncos essentially have a new owner. Rob Walton of the Walmart fortune, who's worth anywhere from between 56 to 65 billion. I've seen different numbers all over the map in terms of his total net worth. Either way, it's a lot of freaking money that he's got in the bank. He had the winning bid for the franchise, a reported $4.65 billion. And while it is not final, it is largely considered a formality. If you remember back to when the Pegulas had the winning bid for the Bills, it was considered a formality, even though the league has to deliver final league approval with an ownership vote, but that is considered to be a formality. Biggest attraction in Walton being the most attractive bidder of the group, he basically was putting all of that money up himself. It's basically him and his son-in-law, Greg Penner, who are the primary bidders in their group. So it's all in one family. A lot of the other bidding groups had multiple investors, and that always makes NFL ownership a little bit nervous, because I think they worry if you have three bidders in your bid, what happens if one pulls out? Do you not have the capital then to compete and have the winning bid and put up the money necessary? So I think that's ultimately what made Walton the clear favorite in this purchasing process. And it ends a very long period of limbo as far as ownership for the Denver Broncos, because Pat Bowlen, who bought the team in 84, he stepped down for health reasons in 2014, passed away in 2019, and then the Broncos have been looking for a completion of sale ever since. Rob Walton, 77 years old. Obviously, that purchase price blows away the previous record for a North American sports franchise. So it was just 4 years ago that the Carolina Panthers were bought by Dave Tepper for $2.3 billion. That was in 2018. And the price for an NFL franchise has already doubled to $4.65 billion in a span of 4 years. It's amazing. And I was talking to some financial people that I know, because the fact that it doubled in 4 years was pretty astounding to me. But I guess if you look at it, the Tepper price that he paid for the Panthers, doubled the price that the Pegulas paid 4 years prior to his time when he purchased the team in 2018, and it's doubled again. So why does it keep compounding where it's doubling in value? And from what I was told, basically the reason is sports franchises are as attractive an investment as anything else out there right now for a couple of reasons. Number one, it's considered by these big time business people as a recession proof property. If we're not in a recession already, we're headed towards it right now in the American economy. And that brings, of course, market uncertainty. So people's investments that are in the market are subject to fluctuation, a devaluing, if you will. Sports franchises show consistent growth, especially the NFL. They're not negatively impacted with what the market's doing. Here's a perfect example. We just came out of a pandemic for the better part of the last 2 years. NFL teams grew 14% year over year, according to Forbes. That's coming out of a pandemic. So, and it wasn't different for the other major sports leagues in this country. NBA teams rose 4%, Major League Baseball teams 9%. And how about this? NHL teams grew 32% in value year over year coming out of the pandemic. So that's why you have multi-billionaires willing to fork over that kind of money for an NFL franchise, because they know in due time, and not a whole lot of time, they'll be getting that money back and more based on the growth of the respective sports league. Then there was this, long after we got off the air, but early yesterday evening, New York Times writer Jenny Vrentis, who used to write for SI.com, among a host of other media outlets, put together a comprehensive piece on Deshaun Watson's accusers, getting comments from some female massage therapists that had Watson as a client but chose not to file suit for personal exposure concerns, getting dragged through the mud publicly, etc. And the big thing to come out of this story was not that the same accusations of sexual misconduct by Watson was consistent with all of the other women who have filed civil lawsuits. For me, the biggest thing to come out of Jenny Vrentis's New York Times write-up was that there were 66 different women over a 17-month period. And while, again, there were two grand juries who chose not to indict Deshaun Watson on any criminal charges, I thought the same, reading this, I thought the same exact thing that Shalise Manza Young wrote on Yahoo Sports Today. She said, "You may not be able to criminally charge Watson, but what you can say, knowing there are at least 66 women out there, is that Watson had an agenda in what his motives were." Because you don't line up 66 different massage therapists unless you have an agenda in mind and you know that it may not be a popular one, for lack of a better term. I think what's most troubling, if it wasn't obvious at the outset, it's obvious now. The Cleveland Browns compromised their principles so they could have a franchise quarterback on their roster. They clearly felt it was worth the risk. They claimed to have done as extensive an investigation, as much due diligence as possible when they signed him. I can only imagine what they're thinking now. And not for nothing, the Texans are part of this too, because in Jenny Vrentis' report, it was revealed that the Texans at least appear to have enabled Watson in these alleged practices. They not only provided him with a membership to a very swanky hotel where he'd use certain suite rooms for massage appointments, and then when some of the therapists took issue with what he allegedly did with them, the Texans provided him with a non-disclosure agreement to present to the therapists to sign when the massage appointment was about to begin. So his alleged actions would be protected from public scrutiny. So I got to tell you, I didn't think the Watson situation could get worse, but it has. And it might get even worse than it is already. So, once again, in a word, yuck. I almost don't even want to see the next twist and turn to this, because I think the scale of this is bigger than any of us realize. If we thought 24 civil suits was wide and expansive, I think, unfortunately, it's only the tip of the iceberg. And I shudder to think where it's going to go from here. This news came down, speaking of the Browns, this news came down about an hour before we went on the air. Browns beat reporter Mary Kay Cabot, who writes for Cleveland.com, is reporting that the Browns are excusing quarterback Baker Mayfield from mandatory minicamp next week in what was described as a quote-unquote mutual decision. Now, it's far from surprising, because we know that basically the Browns have cast their lot with Deshaun Watson as their starting quarterback, and that they want to move on from Baker Mayfield. They just have been unable to find a trade partner willing to take on some or all of his $18.85 million salary on his fifth-year option for 2022. Browns could cut him, but I think they want to try to get something in return for a quarterback that they believe somewhere else in the league still has value. I just think that every other team that is even remotely interested in Baker Mayfield are just going to wait for the Browns to outright cut him, and then they can negotiate a contract of their choosing with Baker Mayfield if, in fact, they're interested in adding him to their roster. Here's the funny thing that comes out of this. So Josh Reed, who I said was here with me doing Monday show, we were debating whether if Watson gets suspended or it gets so messy he doesn't even play in 2022, would Baker Mayfield go back and play for the Browns, knowing that if he played and played well, he could probably get traded out of there more effectively if he proves, you know, hey, I'm a pretty good quarterback, whatever, whatever. I don't see that happening. I'm not going to pretend to know Baker Mayfield well, intimately, anything. But he just strikes me as the kind of person that once you bail on him, once you are no longer backing him, he turns his back on you. And the bridge is burned. There's no more crossing that river anymore. Whether you got a canoe, a rowboat, or you build another bridge, he's not crossing it again. So to me, that's just the way he seems wired. And I'd be hard pressed to blame him in this situation after he decided to go out there all last year, play hurt with a bum wing, non-throwing shoulder granted, but it clearly affected his play. So mutual decision, whatever. I have to believe Baker Mayfield is almost chuckling about this now. I did see somewhere that his wife, Emily Mayfield, was saying he's doing well. He's in great shape. He's fully healthy now. So we'll see where he resurfaces, but I do not think that it's going to be Cleveland. Mitchell Trubisky is taking first-team reps in Steelers minicamp. Mason Rudolph was the backup. Rookie Kenny Pickett serving as the number three quarterback. That's where it sits right now. And I really don't think that that's any surprise when you think about typically how NFL clubs run a quarterback pecking order early in the process. You know, we're in the spring. It's OTAs. Minicamps are next week for a lot of teams. Some minicamps are this week. And more often than not, even when they have a first-round pick quarterback as part of the contingent at the quarterback position, they don't hand him anything. And I think we know Mike Tomlin is wired in a similar fashion to Sean McDermott. You have to earn everything you get. So seeing Pickett as the number three quarterback, not a surprise. And then after that, what they basically did in Pittsburgh was they went with NFL veteran status. Mitchell Trubisky is a sixth-year player. He's getting the first-team reps. And then Mason Rudolph is a fourth-year player. He's getting second-team reps. It won't change, probably, until a week or two into camp. And if someone separates himself from the others, well, then that person will either be elevated, left where they are if it's Trubisky, or maybe Pickett moves up to number two and Rudolph slips to number three. That's when you see a shift in the pecking order, usually week one or two of training camp, if not later, coming out of the first preseason game, perhaps. So to me, even though it's headlines in Pittsburgh, Trubisky taking first team reps, I think it's par for the course as to how that goes. And we'll talk more about the Steelers, because coming up in just a little bit, we'll have former Bills and Steelers linebacker Arthur Motes, who covers the Steelers, as we take a step-by-step approach through the Bills' opponents coming up here in the 2022 season. The Steelers are next on the docket. We'll be talking with Arthur Motes here in about 10 minutes. Tampa Bay running back Leonard Fournette, who played at 228 pounds last season, has apparently not been staying away from the buffet table. Photos from Tampa Bay OTAs of Fournette shows that he clearly has a boiler right now. Reports out of Tampa say he was breathing heavy on some of their drills, this according to the media. He met the media yesterday and said he now weighs over 240 pounds. Let's just say, based on the photos, he's not passing the eyeball test right now. He's, you know, growing another Fournette, for lack of a better description. Now, could he get with a trainer, get himself right before training camp? Sure. I mean, the guy's a world-class athlete. He's certainly capable of that. The question is, will he do that? And I was reminded of a similar situation that happened here in Buffalo a handful of years ago. As a rookie, running back Carlos Williams burst onto the scene here in 2015, had 7 touchdowns, averaged 5.5 yards a carry, comes back to spring OTAs, and the 6'1", 225-pound back suddenly weighs 250 pounds. I remember interviewing him with a bunch of other media, and he said, oh, it's sympathy weight. You know, his wife's pregnant. Okay, fine. And, you know, he said, you know, I'm going to take care of it. So he comes back to training camp in late July, and he's actually heavier. Carlos Williams was 253 pounds. And the problem here was he had a productive rookie season. He thought he had made it. And I don't know what he did, but he clearly didn't do what he needed to do to get himself in the proper shape for a second NFL season. 2 weeks later, he's off the roster. Never played in the NFL again. He latched on in the CFL for a bit, but never played in the NFL again. I don't think that's going to be Leonard Fournette's fate. But it's a situation that bears watching, because he had signed a 1-year contract mid-season when the Bucs won the Super Bowl, then signed another 1-year deal last year. And then this offseason, after visiting New England on a free agent visit, he signs with the Bucs 3 years, $21 million. Does the long-term security of that contract make him a little complacent with his fitness? I don't know. But this is going to be something that bears watching. You better believe that the Tampa media is going to be down there and checking in with what he weighs in at the start of training camp. Not to mention the fact that a lot of these teams have conditioning tests the first day of training camp, and a lot of times you have to pass that conditioning test if you're going to be allowed to practice the very next day. So that'll be under the microscope for Tampa Bay Bucs media for sure. There was this that came out about the Tennessee Titans' first-round pick, Treylon Burks. If you remember, the Titans traded their number one wide receiver, Brown, to the Philadelphia Eagles, and then turned around with their first-round pick to replace him and replaced A.J. Brown with Treylon Burks, the first-round talent out of Arkansas. And we had Teron Davenport, the ESPN beat reporter for the Titans, on our show a couple of weeks ago, and he said, yeah, we're still trying to figure out, was Burks maybe just out of shape? He was breathing hard at practice, couldn't get through some drills. So they were wondering, is he out of shape? What's the situation? Titans wide receivers coach revealed, Rob Moore, the Titans wide receivers coach, he revealed that Burks has asthma. And some media did see him on the sidelines, you know, taking breaths from an inhaler because he was struggling to practice. So it looks like they're working through that situation with Burks right now. And I would imagine that it gets sorted out. There have been other players in the league who have played with asthma and pretty successfully, but it looks like they're having trouble getting a handle on his asthma condition. So hopefully it works out for him, because he is going to be relied upon to play a very, very large role in that offense opposite Robert Woods. And if this slows him down in terms of getting time on the field, reps, all that stuff, that could be an issue. So there's something else that bears watching for Titans training camp. We've got a Twitter topic for you, though, that deals with all things Bills. And I think everybody knows or anticipates that if Gabriel Davis, if in fact he is going to be the number two receiver opposite Stephon Diggs, and there's no reason to believe he will not be, he's going to have a dramatic jump in production this year in 2022. So I'm throwing the question out to you today. Is there anyone else on the Bills roster, offense or defense, that you feel could see a bigger jump in individual production than Gabriel Davis? And like I said, this is an offense or defense question. So think about this Bills roster, go up and down as you see fit. Anyone on this Bills roster that you believe could have a bigger jump in production in 2022 than Gabriel Davis? Offense, defense, it's all on the table for you. 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. The number to get on board or hit us up on the tweet sheet at One Bills Live. We have to take a break here, but when we come back, we're going to be joined by former Bills linebacker and former Steelers linebacker Arthur Motes as we discuss Buffalo's Week 5 opponent, the Pittsburgh Steelers. That's coming up next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, welcome back to One Bills Live here on Wednesday. Chris Brown with you. And be sure to chime in on the Twitter poll as we're asking you, is there anybody besides Gabriel Davis that you think could have a bigger jump in production than Buffalo's forecast number two wide receiver? That is an offense or defense question. Pleased, though, to be joined now by the former Bills linebacker, former Steelers linebacker, and current Steelers radio analyst, Arthur Motes, as we discuss the Bills' opponents coming up here in 2022. What's up, Big Smiles? How you doing, man?
Man, I am living the dream. Always great to be on with you, man. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing great. Doing great. Good to have you. Good to have you. There are a lot more storylines leading up to the Steelers' 2022 season than we're used to seeing. You know, and we'll get to the quarterback stuff in a second.
Yeah, definitely.
But I am fascinated by how this wide receiver pecking order is going to unfold with Juju Smith-Schuster gone, and now with, you know, the kids in the picture and George Pickens and Calvin Austin. What have you seen thus far?
Yeah, man, I've been fortunate, obviously doing my radio show with the Steelers, covering all the OTA practices. Yeah, man, being able to see the growth and development of that group. And it is a very diverse group. When you talk about Deontay Johnson, a young guy trying to show that he could be a wide receiver one in this league, he's obviously trying to get a new contract, but there's still some question marks around him. And the similar being with Chase Claypool. But when you talk about George Pickens and Calvin Austin, those guys have been having a really good OTA minicamp time frame. When you watch some of the things they're bringing to the table, the size, the speed, especially when you're talking about Calvin, the speed element there, those things are flashing, and I do think it's going to make their wide receiver room a lot better, and I think it's a lot more dynamic than it was a year ago where they were obviously dealing with some of the injuries and just the lack of high-end talent that was there in that room prior to, you know, since Antonio Brown has been gone and stuff like that. I think that now they'll be trying to get back to that.
So do you see Deontay as the slot guy, like pretty much the primary slot guy going forward?
Well, to me, I think that he's more of a natural slot, but they're still playing him on the outside right now because of his ability to win consistently out there. I think the emergence of George Pickens, the sooner he can prove that he can be a true outside guy, that will determine when you start to see Deontay bumping in and playing more of that slot role that we think that he can thrive in.
Yeah.
But until you have a guy that's going to consistently win on the outside, and Chase Claypool could be in that conversation as well. He was just a little bit inconsistent at times. But once you finally get those two main guys on the outside, now you can be a little bit more flexible with Deontay Johnson's alignment.
Okay, fair enough. We saw it was a headline the other day, reducing Najee Harris's workload. Look, I know he had 380. I know he had 381 touches last year, but you know, and I'm not here to knock Benny Snell or anybody else on the roster behind him on the running back depth chart. But what does that – I guess what I'm asking, Arthur, is what does it mean if you're giving Najee Harris fewer touches to kind of save him through the course of a 17-game season? Does that mean the Steelers are going to be throwing it more, or are they going to be giving the ball in the backfield to other people?
Now, you remember when we first started this show, you said, hey, man, this is one of those offseasons where it's a ton of storyline, stuff that we typically don't have in the Pittsburgh area. Well, the running back two conversation has dominated those headlines as well because of that dynamic. The simple probability of running backs that have over 300 touches in a season and their shelf life, we see, man, those results are not what you want. So that recipe isn't built for success. You can't really sustain that long term. So that's why you get in the conversation of, hey, we're going to try to decrease his work a little bit. We're going to try to get them some time off in certain elements of it. And that's all well and good if you have a legitimate number two running back or a committee of guys behind Najee that you're confident and comfortable in. And that's the real question when you're talking about Benny Snell, Anthony McFarland, or even some of the undrafted free agents, Mateo Durant out of Duke. These guys, you're hoping that they could, you know, develop and become that consistent contributor so that way you can take some of that workload off of Najee. But if those guys are not that, I don't see how you go through and take that load off. And especially knowing how Coach Tomlin likes to operate with his running backs. We could look back at Le'Veon Bell. We know, hey, man, when he was there, if he was hot, that's the guy he's going to ride. No matter how much of a plan was to include D'Angelo Williams, the process was, hey, man, when he's out there and he's hot the way that he is, we're not taking him off the field. I still feel like at the end of the day, that will be the case. But in terms of just feeling confident in the group as it is right now, I personally don't know how you can feel 100% sure that you have a legitimate option behind Najee with the way that the roster is currently constructed.
Right, because, I mean, you don't have a proven guy there. I mean, I know they drafted McFarland a couple of years ago, and, you know, he was a fourth-round pick. Okay, fine. But you compare what they have now to the era that you mentioned when you had Le'Veon Bell, you had James Conner behind him, like a guy that could some stuff that you felt good about and you knew could spell Bell for, you know, for however long you may have needed him in the game. You don't have that right now. So I don't know. Maybe it's new math. I don't know how you're reducing Harris's touches with what you got behind him right now. Do you see them trying to make a move there and maybe trying to pull somebody off another roster when training camp cutdowns happen?
That's the thing that I think will be the case. I think that right now they play the long game of, hey, you have time, because we know the running back market, there are always going to be surprise cuts from training camp. There are still veterans available, you know, that you might look into and say, hey, man, is this guy worth that flyer? Maybe you don't love him as a starting running back, but when you're talking about a guy coming in and playing potentially 20% of those snaps just to get a little bit of Najee's workload, yeah, you look at some of these veterans that are available and you say, you know what, this guy might be worth a flyer. This guy might be, you know, worth that phone call late in training camp right before the regular season starts where you say, hey, this guy's proven. I know he can handle this role right here, and that be all you need. Because you're not looking for somebody to come in and be a split carries RB2, because they're not doing a running back by committee approach. They're going to still play predominantly through Najee Harris. You just want to find somebody that can just take a little bit of that load off of him, just with the thought process that you're going to have him last longer than 2 years, 3 years in this league. Because at this pace, man, if he keeps getting these 300-plus touches, we know how this ends for this guy.
Yeah.
So you look at some of these vets, but you do have time to see if Benny Snell and Anthony McFarland can continue their development. But as you know, this is shirts and shorts football right now. Every running back should look good. Every athlete should look good in shirts and shorts football. We're really going to know how these guys have developed, and if you can trust them when you put the pads on, when these preseason games begin, that's when you're really going to know what you have behind Najee Harris.
All right, let's move to quarterback. Our guy Mitchell Trubisky's there. It looks like he's getting starter reps here, but it's early. Have the other two quarterbacks in any way shown that they have the potential to be a threat to Trubisky come training camp?
Now, see, I'm glad you brought up Mitch, because to me, when I see him out there, I had this big smile on my face because I was like, that's that Buffalo Bills connection. It works out well. I don't know why it just transitions super duper well, man. But but to me, man, I think that Mitch has been the best quarterback. I've been saying this since it started out. I think that he's just the more mature quarterback. He looks the most confident. You see the zip in his passes, and you can also see the growth that took place for him last year in the preseason. Going back and watching him on tape in the Chicago Bears preseason game, watching him on tape in a couple of other opportunities, he just looked calm. He looked collected. He took the opportunities that were there. He was on time. He really wasn't fazed by any pressure. And when you watch him now in this OTA phase and minicamp phase, it's a similar concept. He is the most even kill. He is the most consistent day in and day out. His throws are the most consistent. So that's why, to me, I think that he has separated himself. Whereas when you look at Kenny Pickett and Mason Rudolph, both of these guys are doing good things in this period as well. But when you look at Mason, he looks like the guy who's been here the second long. He's definitely the third in terms of athletic ability between Mitch Trubisky and Kenny Pickett. But you can just see he started in the NFL before. So it's a certain level that comes with that. Whereas with Kenny, he looks like a rookie. It's moments where he has, you know, flash, and it's like, man, you see the athletic ability. You can see the throwing on the run. You can see what made him such an intriguing player. But it's different when you have Mitch Trubisky here, who's started in this league, who has a Pro Bowl in this league, who's been on multiple teams in this league. It's just certain things that you learn, certain things that you acquire in that process that, to me, has separated him from the other two guys.
Last one I have for you. The defensive line is old, Arthur. And it just got
on,
old.
Don't you do that to the 30 and up, guys.
Yeah, well,
we,
you know.
We gotta have love for the 30.
I'm not young either, but that's a whole nother ball of wax. And Stephon Tuitt, who was the youngest of the starting three, retired. So what is the answer there? Are there young bucks in the ranks to kind of at least take some of the load off of guys like Cameron Hayward and Tyson Alualu?
Yeah, man, that is a new issue because this whole offseason, even dating back to last year, there was a certain level of optimism, regardless of how cautious it was, that Tuitt was going to come back, that Stephon Tuitt will return at some point in time this offseason prior to the season, and now you're getting a 10-plus sack guy, a Pro Bowl caliber D lineman, and ultimately the guy that you were hoping would take over for Cam Hayward as being the alpha on that D-line group. But now with him being retired, yes, the Steelers, they have pieces in place, but it's a different caliber what we're talking about. Yes, they have guys like Chris Wormley, who had 7 sacks last year, who could play the run, and you feel good in terms of him being out there. Isaiah Loudermilk, a 5th-round pick from a year ago. DeMarvin Leal, a very athletic 2nd-round draft pick, 3rd-round draft pick out of Texas A&M. But all three of those guys and a couple of other guys, they're good, but they're not Stephon Tuitt. You like these guys if they're your number 2, if they're your number 3, if they're the guy coming off the bench. Oh, it's a great situation. You applaud the depth that you have. But when you're talking about these guys happen to be 17-game starters, instead of playing 60% of the snaps, now they're playing 80, 90% of the snaps, you're asking a lot from those guys, and I just think that that's where you run into trouble. So early on, yeah, you're going to hope that you can lean on a Chris Wormley. You're going to hope that DeMarvin Leal can really develop at a faster pace. But to me, I still think this is a position where you might want to look on the open market. But as we all know, during this time of year, every person that you're going to look at on the open market is going to have some type of red flag. If you're talking to Ndamukong Suh, obviously you have a little bit of age there. If you're talking Larry Ogunjobi, you're coming off of a recent injury that even caused you to fail a physical this offseason. If you're talking about Eddie Goldman, similar concept. So in terms of trying to replace the productivity that Tuitt brought you at this stage of the offseason, I think it's going to be very difficult. But, you know, that's one of the things that the new general manager, Omar Khan, is going to be tasked with, and hopefully he does a good job with it.
Yeah, a lot still on the to-do list to shape this roster up to where they probably would like it to be. Arthur, always good to talk to you, man. We'll probably see you in the fall, week 5.
Hey, looking forward to it, as always. You know, it's always a blast being on with you, man.
Yeah, good to talk to you, Arthur. Be well.
Likewise.
All right, that's Arthur Motes, former Bills linebacker and current Steelers radio analyst, joining us here on the show. We will step aside here, but when we come back, we are going to hear from one DaQuan Jones, Bills defensive tackle, who addressed the media this week. We'll catch up with him next here on One Bills Live. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back. One Bills Live is the show. Chris Brown here with you. And as promised, there were a bunch of players that addressed the media after practice this week, and we did not get an opportunity to pass along some comments from a couple of them. We're going to do that today. One of them is one of the Bills' newest defensive tackles, DaQuan Jones. The defensive line has seen the biggest turnover in terms of personnel changes from last season to this season. You've got, let me see, you've got of the 11 main players on the defensive line, six of them are new. Granted, Shaq Lawson and Jordan Phillips have been here before, but they're new additions from last season's roster. DaQuan Jones is expected to play a prominent role, especially on early rundowns, as a defensive tackle in this system under Leslie Frazier. So here is DaQuan Jones and his impressions thus far in Buffalo.
Pretty fit there, DaQuan. Isn't it about time you hit some of those, hit some chicken wings here?
Yeah, a little bit. Some of them. Pretty good, actually.
What do you weigh at this time of year?
320.
320.
Yeah.
What do you see at Oliver when you're lined up next to him?
He's special. I mean, we have no pads out right now, but his first step off the football, it's pretty crazy. And I didn't realize how actually small he was until I lined up with him. But I mean, he's a competitor, man. I really can't wait to go out there in training camp and really get to know each other and how we play and how we're gonna react off each other. So I'm excited.
Obviously, a lot made about Bill signing Von Miller. But with all the new faces on this defensive line, I don't think people even realize how much talent, from 1 to 9, 10, 11, there is on this defensive line. Is that sense kind of percolating amongst the room?
I mean, I think we know. I mean, I know everyone's cared about, about Von and him signing, but I think we all know who we have in that room and the potential we have when we step on that field. So, I mean, we're all excited. We talk about it every day, and we just can't wait to go out there and showcase it.
What are some of the traits you think this defensive line brings to the defense as a whole? I mean, even on different teams, what are some impressions you're getting from these guys already?
I mean, they're all jacks of all trades. I mean, they all can move around and play different positions, which I think is very important at this level. So to be able to have, and can play inside and outside and just move all around, I mean, it would truly help your team. You can be more diverse in what you do. So I just think their depth and what they can do is really going to help.
Now that you've been around the group for a little bit now, how would you describe the collection of personalities among you guys on the defensive front?
They're a character. That group, I mean, you're never not laughing, you're never not smiling in that room, and they're at it every day, cracking jokes on each other, so it's going to be a fun year for sure.
How does that translate to football and actions and performance among
Yeah, I mean, that builds that chemistry in the field. I mean, when you talk to someone every day and you can joke around them and hang out outside of football, I mean, it's like an unspoken chemistry in the field. When you step out there, you can just look at someone and know what they're going to do, and it's just it's like a sixth sense. I mean, it's crazy.
About personalities. Who's the funniest?
I'll say Mike Love. Between Mike Love and I say Big Phil. Big Phil got some good one-liners in there.
Who thinks they're the funniest?
Mike Love. For sure.
What have your impressions been of Leslie Frazier?
Great. I mean, I've heard about him, since being in the league and having an opportunity to play with him. I'm really excited. His knowledge of the game and how he runs his defense is pretty cool, and I just can't wait to truly learn it really see what it's about. I mean, we're only in the beginning stages and kind of, a couple plays here and there, but I really can't wait to open it up and really see what he has to offer.
How has Coach Washington been impactful for you in OTA so far?
Yeah, I mean, I get a lot of Larry Johnson vibes from Coach E, and I told him that. His energy and how he coaches and how he teaches, you don't get that everywhere. And I try to tell the guys that, like, you go other places, it's like next man up, and they talk to the guy they drafted first. But he coaches every single one and everyone in that room, and make sure that everyone has the details and the assignment of their job. And you don't get that everywhere, and you gotta take it for granted. So don't take it for granted. So
I know we talked about you admiring Josh from afar, but now that you're on the field with him every day going against him, I know it's not live.
Mm-hmm.
Just seeing Josh Allen every day, what's that like?
It's reassuring to have a quarterback like that to go out there and he's going to compete and he's going to make the plays that we need him to make. And it's great.
Do
I mean, I have no complaints. Yeah, it's good. It's good.
You mentioned the chemistry of the D-line as a whole, but the younger guys seem especially close. How quickly could you sense that, you know, they had really built that?
I mean, that's the character of the room, to be able to welcome these guys in and kind of don't skip a beat, and have them just join our mold. And, you know, we're all in this together, and we're all going to help each other develop and get better. So, I mean, they came in, and they're working hard. They're eager to learn, so they're fitting just fine.
In your experience, obviously there's no pads here, you know, won't be in mini camp. How does a defense develop a collective physical style in the run front?
I feel like it's all mental, really. I mean, you get that mindset of knowing what we have to do. Stopping a run is all mental. I don't all the physicality and stuff like that. I mean, you can try to be the physical person in the room and try to go out there and bang, 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 but if you don't know what's coming and how to stop it, it's not going to matter. So I think really having the mindset of stopping a run and knowing what's coming and how to do your job, you'll be all right.
Is training camp really important for that? Like, for instance, I don't know who Tennessee is playing in week one, but whoever they are, that defense has got to get ready for Derrick Henry.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, do you develop that mentality in training camp, or do you just better turn the switch on week one when you play Derrick Henry?
I mean, you know, people are different. People play the game different. I can't speak for a linebacker or a safety how he does it, but I know for me, like, you know, I'm going to study that film and see what they like to do, what the tendencies are, and go from there. And all I have to do is beat my guy in front of me and make sure Derrick Henry don't get his feet running. So, so, I mean, if you know what's coming and you beat your guy in front of you, you'd be all right and step on the run.
Monday night, Tennessee Titans.
Mm-hmm.
Got that circled on the calendar, I know for sure, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
What's it going to be like now with no quick whistles? You don't have to ease up on Tannehill and Henry. What that's going to actually be like for you?
Y'all going to see. Yeah, we're going to wait. I ain't going to talk about it. We're going to wait.
You talked about some of those younger guys working. Leslie Frazier told us this morning just about the expectations he has for players like Boogie and Greg and AJ. What type of potential do you see in that?
A lot. I mean, it brings you back because you were there, you were once there, and you know how hungry they are to make a team, and you know, to see them come in here and work, and the fact that they grasp the playbooks so fast already is a true testament to themselves. But they're doing a great job, and you know, really time will tell what you know what's going to happen when I'm going forward.
What have you learned or enjoyed about Buffalo in the few months you've been here outside of
You know, I didn't. There's some hidden gems here as far as restaurants, and the D-line went to a couple. Don't ask the name, I can't remember, but they were really good. So I really enjoyed going out to eat and kind of exploring the area. So it's beautiful out here. I really like it.
What are the D-line gatherings like? What is it like when you guys go out? What's the vibe?
It's fun. Yeah, it's fun. That's all I can say, but yeah, it's fun.
In home base, is it Nashville? Or Nashville.
Binghamton or? Nashville.
Yeah.
All right. That's defensive tackle DaQuan Jones, who addressed the media this week after OTA practices. And if you listen to some of the things he discussed, you can already sense, and this is a guy who's been in the building essentially for work for the better part of the last month, he senses a very good vibe in that defensive line room, which is important in light of the turnover that I touched on already, because more than half of that group has turned over and is new. And so what you have is a challenge of not only having guys getting up to speed on the system, which is something Leslie Frazier talked about the other day. What he essentially said was, we were accustomed to having guys that have been here for a couple of years. And so going back to the root basics of how we run this defensive front and the techniques we use and the way in which we have players work off one another, we had to strip it back down to the first or second rung of the ladder and reteach it, because you have brand new guys to it, like DaQuan Jones, like Tim Settle, and players like that, and even Von Miller. So because of that, they've had to kind of start with the foundational layers of the defense as it pertains to defensive line play. And we've seen it here during OTAs. Even when you have a team segment and it's 7-on-7 with no line involved, Coach Washington's got the defensive lineman down here at one end of the field, and he is putting them through the sets, the paces, the rotations, the split, you know, the stunts, the twists, all of that stuff, because he wants to drill it with them over and over and over and over. But here's what I like about the composition of the defensive line contingent. And you heard Daquan Jones touch on it a little bit there. You have juice and energy guys that keep the mood light. There's levity. That's Shaq Lawson and Jordan Phillips. You have grinder-type players who the other guys know they can rely on to do their job. That's guys like Tim Settle, Daquan Jones, Shaq Lawson. Okay. Then you have your ultra-talented, gifted players like Von Miller, Ed Oliver, Greg Rousseau. So you roll all that together, and I like the mix. Now it's about those guys blending together as one unit and being effective out there on Sundays. But certainly a lot to be encouraged about with that group. Now it's about the blend, and really that's not going to happen, because I asked Coach Frazier that question earlier this week, and he said that's really not going to happen for defensive linemen because they're not playing real football until the pads go on. It's, you know, it's a lot of patty cape type football for them right now. You really don't develop chemistry until you can put the pads on and play something closer to real football in the practice setting in training camp. We will take a break here, but when we come back, it's NFL Network analyst and former Bills front office man Mark Ross joining us. We're going to talk to him about some of the write-ups he recently put up on NFL.com concerning rookies that have been dropped into advantageous places as far as the early part of their career is concerned. He also talked about some other things, including the most complete rosters in the NFL heading into the 2022 season. We'll talk to Mark Ross next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kalata Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio.
Steve Tasker, who has been all over the field.
Kind of unique. He was kind of a dual role player for you. Steve.
A balloon.
Steve. A blimp. We're not even in the stratosphere of normalcy. All right, here we are, hour number two on a Wednesday. Chris Brown with you, and happy to be joined now by former Giants front office exec, also a front office guy here with the Bills, and current XFL Executive Vice President of Football Operations, also an NFL Network analyst, it's Mark Ross. Yeah, how do you fit all that on a business card, man? That's a lot of titles. How you doing?
Got to have two different ones, man. You got to separate.
Got to have like a business tablet. My God. I wanted to catch up with you, Mark. I mean, this is kind of we're getting into the only dead period, really, that the NFL has after mini camps are put to bed next week. And, you know, you're always looking for interesting content. I thought you had a couple of good write-ups the last couple of weeks on NFL.com, the first of which dealt with the most complete rosters in the NFL, as you see it, heading into 2022. Yeah, the Bills ranked third there. And while I think that's a fair ranking, what I want you to tell me is what appealed to you more about Tampa, who you had number one, and the Chargers, who you had number two.
Yeah, Chris. So those things are always fun exercises, and no matter how I rank them or put them, someone's not going to be happy about where their team is.
Yeah.
You know, if you're two, why aren't we one? If we're three, why aren't we two? Why aren't we one? So it's always just fun to put that together and throw a little monkey wrench in there sometimes, get
right.
People talking, but Just overall, I thought there were just certain positions that the Bucs just had a little bit more star power and, you know, big time playmakers, linebacker position, the receiver position, just overall that they just had a little bit more Pro Bowl caliber players there than the Bills had. Now, overall, I think the Bills roster, their strengths and weaknesses, all teams have strengths and weaknesses, and they just have a little bit more solid type of players and sort of superstar type players at certain positions. And that's the only reason why.
And then I kind of like your pick of the Chargers there, because I think they've done an awful lot here in the offseason. And so the roster looks complete on paper. Just in your experience, how challenging is it, though, when you add as many new pieces to the fray that the Chargers have done? I mean, it's talented pieces, don't get me wrong. One of the best corners on the market in J.C. Jackson. You trade for Khalil Mack. You quietly add two pretty solid interior defensive line players in Austin Johnson and Sebastian Joseph Day. So they've really done a lot to shore up that defense. But in your experience, how big is the challenge when there are so many new pieces that have been added?
Right. Yeah. So for the Chargers last year, they had a really talented roster. And now, as you mentioned, just all those pieces that they added, I mean, they just got tremendously better and more talented. And, you know, that old school thinking, Chris, was, okay, we need to have the team together and we need to play a couple years and mesh and grow and learn and build. The last two Super Bowl champions have shown that that is really kind of going out the window, where at the Rams and the Bucks, they both went, had completely different teams from one year to the next. They went all in. They signed a bunch of guys. You know, the Rams famously getting rid of all their picks and let's just go get it and it'll all fall into place. And 5 years ago, you say, of course, we're not going to do that. The offseason champ never wins. The last two Super Bowl champions have done it. So now that is the new blueprint for how let's go get a team, let's go get a Super Bowl. And it's shown that it works. It's not just being talked about anymore or weak. This is a possibility. It actually has worked. They've won Super Bowls. So I think now all teams are looking at it as, yep, we can do it too.
So what do you think has changed? Because obviously it's prompted a trend. You know, the Bucs and the Rams are not considered as, you know, buying a championship type outliers. It's a trend now. So what has changed? What has made that a more viable way to get to the Super Bowl?
Well, it's funny, the Tom Brady effect still has lasting impact, right? sorry to bring him up in Buffalo, but for what, 20 years there was, let's just be like the Patriots, do what the Patriots do. But no, it's Tom Brady. Go get Tom Brady first, then you can do what the Patriots can do. But now, okay, now the Tom Brady effect going down to Tampa, where a 500 team, and now you insert him into that lineup and it works. Now the Rams follow suit, where it's the Matt Stafford, and people have their different opinions about how great Matthew Stafford was before he went to the Rams, but okay, he proved that he was the missing piece. So I think it's, you have to have the quarterback. You can chase all these free agents, do all that, but if you don't have the quarterback, it doesn't matter. It's not going to work. And I think in years past, you saw teams that did not have the quarterback and they just signed a bunch of free agents trying to make an average quarterback better. But now I think teams are seeing, they should see that, all right, you need to have the guy under center. You need to have a Super Bowl caliber winning quarterback first. Then we can kind of go all in to try to get that Super Bowl.
Yeah. Another thing that you put together for NFL.com, NFL rookies that are in the best situations to succeed in 2022 and beyond. You had Kyir Elam third on the list. And I think most Bills fans know why he would rank high. What it seems like his opportunity is twofold, though, Mark, because Trey White's recovery from an ACL could thrust him into a role without even having to compete for it, at least early in the season. But then there is the Dane Jackson competition on the other side, a kid who's entering his third year and played pretty darn well after Trey left the lineup after Thanksgiving last year. But you see Elam as an early starter, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I think with him and Dane Jackson, I love Dane Jackson coming out of Pitt, man. Yeah. I thought he was just one of those guys that very similar to it's the way you guys pick secondary guys. There's like guys that just really know how to play football. Doesn't matter what they run, what they jump, what they look like, what their size is. Those guys know how to play football. And that was Dane Jackson. Now you bring in Elam, who he fits that bill too, but I think he was just one of the more supremely talented corners in the draft too. So he's got that mix of, you know, when I had the physical gifts, but when I watch him play football, like, man, this guy really knows how to play football. So for him, that makes it even easier of a transition, I think, where you have a secondary, and Leslie Frazier's my guy from back in Philly back in the day, Sean. You know, those guys know how to coach secondary players. You already have those guys that have already been to Pro Bowls and all-pro type players there to take all the burden away and teach and learn. So, Elam, okay, let me just step in here with all this talent that I have, all this experience, all this knowledge, not just from my teammates at the position, but also the coaches who are coaching me at this position. And let me just go in there and thrive and use my gifts where, okay, I'm a rookie, but this seamless transition for me to just step into this number one ranked defense, I'm the final piece that not put them over the hump, but just play my role and do what I can do.
Taking that a step further, Buffalo's second round pick in James Cook appears to have a skill set that was somewhat absent from Buffalo's backfield, maybe since McCoy left. Just a pass-catching, route-running polish that maybe the other backs don't quite have or certainly didn't have coming out in the draft. Could he be a similar fit on offense in terms of playing an early role? Maybe not a full-blown starter like Elam, but you get what I'm saying there in terms of the uniqueness that he brings?
Yeah, and it's even more so at the running back position where it's we talk about new modern-day football, the way things are played now. It's not 10 years ago where it's one back and he's on the field the whole time. Now it's let's get a committee of backs and who can do certain things well and complement each other with the players that we have in the backfield. So almost certainly with Cook and the Bills brain trust talked about it after the draft, like we thought this guy did these certain things really well. And we know he can do those things and we're going to highlight those in our offense. And that's the best synergy of when you scout a player, know his strengths, you're with the coaching staff and say, yep, we're going to use him to do this as opposed to, okay, now we get James Cook here. Let's run him between the tackles four times in a row. They know exactly what they want to do for him. And with the complement of the Singletaries and the other backs in that group, that's really the optimal situation that you want when you have players and when you have depth at certain positions, that the whole burden is not just on one player. Let's accentuate what these players do really well to complement each other.
Mark, let's talk about maybe the biggest change on the offensive side of the ball, and that's at the coordinator spot with Ken Dorsey now taking over there. I mean, he's been here three seasons as the quarterback's coach, so he kind of knows the system. He's not going to reinvent the wheel here. He'll obviously put his twist on it. I don't know your level of familiarity with Dorsey per se, but what is your general experience in terms of the hurdles that new coordinators have to clear as they get up to speed, especially a guy who's never called plays before on game day like Dorsey?
Yeah, well, you know, I scouted Ken Dorsey, so, you know, familiar with him for a long time, but it's completely different when you're a coach, and it's easy to just say, yep, let's just keep the system rolling and keep going. You know, the year we won the Super Bowl with the Giants in 07 with Spags, and he stayed another year, and then he left, and it was, okay, let's just promote our next guy up, our linebacker coach, we'll keep it rolling, who had never called plays, never been a coordinator. And it's not that easy. It's a nuance. It's a skill to calling plays and putting your players in the right position. And, yes, you can say he's been around and you think he can do it, but until they actually do it, you don't know if they'll be as successful as the prior coordinator or if they'll be successful at all. You know, for Ken Dorsey's benefit, he does have Josh Allen. And Josh Allen is kind of the ultimate eraser of, okay, I might not call the perfect play, but I'm going to bail you out of this thing and make a 30-yard throw on the move while breaking three tackles. So Josh Allen, I think he's at a point where he can really just dominate games outside of the game plan. So that makes it a lot easier for Ken Dorsey to learn in game situations and learn on the go to be a really good coordinator because of the brilliance of Josh Allen.
And I think what gets lost when people see, I'm talking about the casual fan, they see a person ascend to a coordinator's role. I think what gets overlooked is there's like a feel element to the play calling on game day, right? Like when to adjust, when to pivot, when they see the defense on the other sideline has kind of changed course a little bit, changed their approach. How much do you change? Do you leave what you're doing? There's a feel element to that job, right?
No question. Yeah, and it's just like players. People think when you evaluate players, who's ever the biggest, fastest, strongest player, the best players, and that's not the case. There's a lot of mental gymnastics. There's a lot of nuance. There's a lot of feel and natural elements to playing a position, any position, that is almost more important, much, much more important than physical gifts at times. And it's the same things with coaches, where coaches could game plan all week and be, we work hard, we're in the office all night long and put together the perfect game plan. But once you're in a game situation and things change from series to series, from play to play, from quarter to quarter, who are those coordinators who are able to identify what's going on, make adjustments, put their team in the best position, overcome whatever the defense is doing? And that's something that's really learned. And some people have a great feel for it and some people don't. It's, you know, it's not just game planning and what's on a piece of paper. It's what is going on in the game. How am I adjusting mentally and quickly to outpace the defense?
The last one I had for you, because I had to ask this. You were posed the question, which current NFL player would you most like to see in the broadcast booth one day? And you picked Lamar Jackson. I really need you to explain this one to me.
Well, as we've seen, I mean, pretty much everyone in the booth is the same. I mean, just the latest signings of all these guys are the same guys. So it's like, okay, who do the people want to see that is different? Because I don't think people actually turn on games to hear people, astronomical, the money these guys are getting. But it just the Lamar that I've been around and saw, just his honesty, his authenticness, his uniqueness is just something that you just don't see in the booth. And the way he goes about it, you see him in post-game interviews, his press conferences, he's just completely different. And I just think that's refreshing, almost how we see Aqib Talib up there in the booth. You know, the guy, I love the guy. When you just hear him, it's just something different. So, you know, that's why I picked Lamar Jackson. It's easy to pick the most polished guy or the guy that – but Lamar, to me, was just something. Who's somebody different that you'd want to go and turn on and listen to?
That's why I like Charles Barkley when he's doing NBA games. I mean, guy's a cut-up, man. He's a riot. He's just different. He's not worrying about the X's and O's. He's just making the whole dang thing fun.
Exactly. When you watch that Inside the NBA show, those guys are obviously dropping knowledge, but it is more so the entertainment factor of it and the uniqueness of they're just being themselves. And I think Lamar could add that element as well.
Yeah, cool. All right. Well, listen, Mark, thanks for the time. We appreciate you giving us some, especially during the downtime here of the NFL calendar year. We'll catch up with you as we get closer to the season. Enjoy your summer.
Sure thing, Chris. Anytime.
All right. That's Mark Ross, NFL Network analyst, former front office guy for the Eagles, the Giants, and the Bills. Guy knows about the inner workings of the NFL at the top of the ladder. Wanted to get to the tweet sheet, though, as we have yet to get to your comments on our topic of the day, which was basically, is there anyone on the Bills roster, offense or defense, that you think could have a bigger jump in production than what's anticipated for Gabriel Davis, as many of us believe he will be ascending into the number two receiver role opposite Stephon Diggs? And when you think about it, Gabriel Davis had 7 touchdowns his rookie year and 6 touchdowns last year, and he did it on 35 receptions in each of those 2 seasons. That is a very high touchdown per catch ratio for both of those years. And then obviously he blew up in the divisional playoff with 4 touchdowns. So I think the expectations are very high for Gabriel Davis, knowing he's going to get the most playing time he has ever seen in a Bills uniform this coming season. But give me a name of somebody that you think could compete with Davis on this Bills roster, offense or defense, that will see a similar jump or an even bigger jump in production this coming year. So we go to the tweet sheet, which, as you know, is brought to you by Corrigan Moving Systems, the official equipment moving company of the Buffalo Bills. And Butch leads us off and says, yes, I feel Spencer Brown will make the Pro Bowl along with Deion Dawkins. Now, that is a name I was not anticipating. I have to be honest. I know a lot of these polls often drift and gravitate towards the skill position players, but good on you for mentioning a tackle. Spencer Brown even admitted himself after last season that there were nuances of his game that he wants to improve upon and clean up coming into this season. Hasn't been on the practice field with OTAs. As Coach McDermott said, he's dealing with a little rehab here, coming off of something this offseason. So we'll have to wait and see on that. But Dawkins made the Pro Bowl last year. There's no reason to think he can't maintain that level. Guy made the Pro Bowl despite two bouts with COVID in the same season. So if Deion can stay 100% healthy this year, who knows what level he's going to hit. But Spencer Brown is an interesting choice out of the gates here in terms of who you think on the Bills roster could have a bigger jump in production than Gabriel Davis. Rick on the tweet sheet says, maybe Dane Jackson. I think he'll win the starting cornerback job over Elam and is talented enough to make a huge impact. I was a Dane Jackson fan as early as last year, after I was encouraged by what he showed us in spot duty as a rookie in 2020. Just seemed to have a nose for the ball, was a physical type corner, gritty type player. I just liked the style of his play, and I think he held up extraordinarily well last year when he took on a full-time starting role when Tre'Davious obviously had the ACL injury on Thanksgiving in New Orleans. So Dane Jackson, interesting pick there. Steve says, not on the offensive side of the ball, but on the defensive side of the ball, I am expecting a great year from Ed Oliver with the new pieces around him and a year of maturity under last year's first two draft choices. So this is how I look at Ed. I think some people are disappointed because they haven't seen the sack production from Ed, because they see him as a penetrating, get to the quarterback type defensive tackle. But I will say this: career high in tackles for loss last year, had four sacks, which is one off of his career high that he had his rookie season with five. And he was right there in terms of total tackles with his rookie season. And he had a career-high 14 quarterback hits. You add Von Miller to the equation off the edge. You put behemoth defensive tackles next to him, like Jordan Phillips, Tim Settle, DaQuan Jones. Rotate them in however you wish. And I think the opportunity is great for Ed Oliver to get home even more often than he was showing down the stretch last season. I know there are critics that are not impressed with his run defense skills. Some have even gone so far as to call him a liability in that area. I don't know if I'm on board with that assessment, because I think he's a capable run defender. But if you look at the talent that is now going to be next to him on that defensive line, chiefly Von Miller, of course, who's going to draw a ton of attention, I think in one-on-one situations, Ed Oliver is going to win every single time. And it's going to really create a conundrum for opposing offensive lines, because you can't double everybody up front. So if you're going to double Von Miller and account for him, that means Ed, a good portion of the time, could be freed up in one-on-one situations. And to me, that speaks to more production for Ed Oliver when all is said and done. So I like that choice a lot. From Steve. Calgary guy says, hey, Brownie, love listening to the show from Billings, Montana. Question, are guys like Cam Lewis and other depth corners just not good enough to be considered to fill in for an injured Trey White? I wouldn't dismiss Cam Lewis from the jump at all. I think he's a very capable and talented player. For the last couple of years, he's been the backup nickel to Taron Johnson, who I still think is one of the most underrated players on the entire Bills roster. But Cam Lewis, make no mistake, is a quality depth corner. And I found Leslie Frazier's most recent comments about Cam Lewis very interesting. He not only sees him as a backup nickel to Taron Johnson, he believes that Cam can also be lined up outside, and he may factor in to the competition out there. Now, is he going to land the starting job? I think that's an uphill climb for him, because I would put Dane Jackson and Kyir Elam ahead of him in the pecking order. But yes, I mean, he's a valuable depth player, and I see him on the 53-man roster this year as a depth corner. Let's go to the phones at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. Leading us off today is Dan down there in Tampa. What do you have for us, Dan? You're on One Bills Live.
Hey, Brownie. Yeah, it's Dan. And so, first of all, I'm from Buffalo, just so you know. My heart is with the Bills. It's not with the Bucks. I love the Bucks, but I don't love them as much as the Bills. My thought is that I think as a position group, the tight end group is really going to come on because Dorsey's his own man. I think he's different than Daboll. And my guess, and I don't want to get too far into the jet sweeps and all that other stuff with, you know, Cook, but as far as Howard and Knox, I think you could see that 7% that Jeremy has cited so many times in the past go up to probably 18 to 20% this year because it would make our offense so much more diverse, and the defense has to think that much more about what we're going to do. And it could still be a run play with Singletary, or it could be the intermediate passes, et cetera. And I think that Davis and Diggs will not leave the field, but we might sub out, you know, the Crowders or whatever and put in Howard, because when Howard's healthy, he has played really well. I've been following him, Brownie, since Alabama. So Alabama games are on here every week in Tampa. And so not only that, obviously with the Bucks, when he was healthy, he made an impact. He is a really good pass-catching tight end. And he's finally, I think, got, you know, all the Humpty Dumpties put all back together finally again. So I'd like to see, and I think is going to be a big increase there. And I still think Gabe Davis, like you posited this morning or earlier, is going to have a significant increase as well. I just see we are going to see a more dynamic offense this year. It will not be the same offense that everybody has gotten used to. It's going to be a little different, but not dramatically different. It's just we're going to make good better. That's my point.
Yeah, good call, Dan, and thanks for it. I'll say this, because Steve and I have discussed this too, even with some of the guests we've had on the show, about where this offense is going to go and what it's going to look like with some of the new additions. And O.J. Howard is a bit of a riddle right now. He's ultra-talented. He brings a lot to the offensive scheme. How is he going to be deployed? Is he going to be basically a rotating in for Dawson Knox to give him a break, or is he going to have a much larger role? And if he does, is he on the field with Dawson Knox? Because Steve and I were kind of just throwing different personnel groupings around. You know, a traditional personnel grouping in this league when it was 3 yards in a cloud of dust was 22 personnel with two backs and two tight ends. One of those backs was usually a fullback, and they'd be lined up in an I formation and pounded up in there. Nowadays, you could conceivably have 22 personnel on the field. It's Dawson Knox and O.J. Howard, and then it's James Cook and Devin Singletary in the backfield. Well, what are you getting? Are you getting a run play here, or are you getting a throw? And if it is a passing play, is it going to one of those two tight ends, or is it going to James Cook, who's coming out on a flare? So the 22 personnel package with O.J. Howard and Dawson Knox and James Cook and Devin Singletary in the backfield, to me, is a very intriguing personnel grouping that allows you to play modern-day football in a very traditional personnel grouping. That's what's intriguing to me, and I wonder if we see some of that through the course of this season, depending on the opponent and the game plan, obviously. We go to Aaron in Attica next. What do you have for us, Aaron? You're on One Bills Live.
Hey, I was just, as far as production wise, and I think a guy that the top Gabe Davis would be a better. I think he have more production.
You're breaking up a little bit there.
And I know they play different positions.
Okay.
James and Crowder's my guy.
Okay. I don't mind that. I had him down on my list among guys that could see a tremendous jump in production. And for him, it's due mainly to the fact that he's no longer with the Jets. He'll be coming to the Bills and be playing with an all-world quarterback like Josh Allen. But here's the impressive thing about Jamison Crowder. Okay? This is a guy that has played in an offense that didn't really have too much else to offer in the passing game. There were times where he was the number one concern of opponents the last few years with the Jets, and yet he still produced. 78 receptions in 2019, 59 in 2020, when the stuff kind of hit the fan there. And then this past year under new head coach Robert Saleh and a rookie quarterback, he still had 51 receptions. So 51, I mean, he could hit that quite easily in this offense. Granted, there will be a greater target share here with the likes of Gabriel Davis and Stephon Diggs and Dawson Knox. So Crowder may be a little bit further down the pecking order than he's been with the Jets the last couple of years. But I think he's got an opportunity to be extraordinarily productive. And the reason why is I think his separation ability is so good that he's going to present Josh Allen with so many high efficiency throws for completions that he may become a more frequent target than any of us anticipate going forward here. So I think he's most definitely on the list of considerations of players besides Gabriel Davis who could see a gigantic jump in production in 2022. Time for us to take a break here, but when we come back, we're going to be hearing from Bills linebacker Tremaine Edmonds. He's got a few things on his to-do list as far as where he wants to improve his game. We heard defensive coordinator Leslie Frazier say the other day, more splash plays are needed from Tremaine Edmonds. What does Tremaine Edmonds think about that? We'll hear from him next when we come back here on One Bills Live, presented by Kalata Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, final half hour of the show here, One Bills Live on a Wednesday. Chris Brown with you, and we wanted to pass along these comments to you. We heard Leslie Frazier earlier in the week say that if there's one thing they're looking for from Tremaine Edmonds in season number 5, it is more splash plays, more of those big impact plays. Tremaine Edmonds was asked what he thought about that, among other things, when he met with the media this week at OTAs. Here now is Tremaine Edmonds.
Tremaine, how much is the contract situation present with you heading into this season?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not really, you know, obviously you think about it a little bit, but, I can't control that, you know what I mean? All I can control is, you know, how I come out each and every day and just work, you know what I mean? All that kind of stuff, you know, you kind of just put it on the top shelf and, you know, just do the stuff that you've been doing this whole time. And like I said, that's just me coming out working, me continue to get better because there's still a lot of stuff that I know I can get better with and, you know, just control the things that I can control.
You've reached out to or leaned on for advice on how to do that that's maybe been in a similar situation entering a contract year?
No, I haven't really reached out to a lot of guys because I think I'm doing a pretty good job as far as keeping a balance with football and, you know, think the business side of it. I love this game. You know, I love to come out here and play. So, you know, I'm just going to come out each and every day, man, and, you know, go to work and see you getting better.
Leslie talked about you making more splash plays, you know, maybe having a few more of those. How does that come about? Like, is that things of seeing things, attacking the ball more? How do you make more splash plays?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit everything. Whether it's seeing stuff, whether it's stuff you pick up in the classroom, just being in the right position at the right time, just trusting what you see. I think you can kind of say everything, you know, ultimately comes up with making splash plays. But, you know, obviously we all play this game to, you know, make big plays and, you know, to be the best player that we could be. So I'm going to continue trusting myself, continue, trusting the people around me and, you know, those things that come.
Do you change your preparation at all for that, or is it just, you know, trying to dive in more?
It's just diving in more. You know, I think I do a good job of preparing. You know, obviously, there's always things you can get better with. You know, I've never once said that, you know, my preparation is, you know, it can't be fixed at all. I think that any great player that you ask, any good player that you ask, or somebody who wants to be great, will also say, each year they try to do something a little bit different. We still have time until the season comes, so I still have time to, you know, adjust my routine to how I want it to be this year. But, you know, a lot of that is whether it's leaning on older guys that's been there before or, you know, people that's, you know, been in a position that you want to get in just to kind of see how they go about business and kind of just, you know, correlate into how you do business.
What are some of the other adjustments?
As far as?
Like, if you're tweaking some things this year in preparation, you mentioned talking on the older guys, but are there other things you're doing too?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, everybody's routine is going to be a little bit different. So, you know, it's hard for me to say now, you know, the season's not here yet. So it's kind of still putting those things in motion now.
Talking about those older guys, when you talk about like guys like Lorenzo Alexander, Jerry Hughes, how did you learn from those guys to help develop your game of being an anchor of this defense?
Yeah, I think when I came in, man, we had a lot of great guys here. Kyle Williams did things the right way. Like you said, Lorenzo Alexander did things the right way. Jerry Hughes, the list goes on and on, man. So, you know, I was fortunate enough to come into a situation where I could learn from those older guys. And those older guys, you know, opened their arms to me. And so, you know, I'm very fortunate for that and, you know, learn a lot from those guys for sure.
What is it like being the older guy at 24?
Yeah, you know, I'm going into year five, man, but, you know, still a young guy. But, you know, I've took on that leadership role, man, and haven't looked back since. So, you know, it feels good, man, just knowing that guys trust me. You know, if they have a question, they can come to me and ask me a question, man. And, you know, I'm all arms, man. You know, I've told everybody since they got here, you got any problems, man, you can come talk to me and we can get it handled. If I can't get it handled, I'm pretty sure somebody else can. So, you know, we got a great group of guys.
What's it been like working with Bobby Babich as your new position coach?
Yeah, he's been good. He's been good, man. I think, you know, he has a lot of energy to himself, man. Obviously, he knows the game a whole lot, being that he's coming from the safety position. It's been good, and, you know, a lot of guys in the room are really excited to get this season on the way.
Seems to be a guy that's never lacking for energy. Is that a good way to describe him?
It's a great way to describe him. You know, energy is contagious, so he brings energy every day, so it just forces all of us in the room to bring the energy, man, and that's all you can ask for.
What's it like having Shaq and Jordan Phillips back in the building?
My guys, man, I'm really excited. They're excited. I remember when they first signed, man, they was fired up, and I was fired up. I was like, let's do it. So, man, it's great to see those guys, man. They haven't fell off one bit, still moving around good, still making plays, still the same guys, and, you know, I'm really excited to play with them.
They bring a little different kind of juice.
Yeah, they bring juice every day, man, and, you know, you need that in the locker room.
Along those lines, your defensive line has really, you know, shifted quite a bit with the addition of Vaughn and defensive tackle. You've made a lot of moves there. What do you think about all those moves up front and how may those benefit you as a linebacker?
Yeah, you know, I like it a lot, man. You know, we got some great group of guys in, and, you know, guys that like to work. You know, not just good on paper, not just good, you know, statistically, but, you know, guys who come in each and every day and they work. And it's sure, you can put the practice tape on, guys are playing fast, guys are practicing hard, and guys just truly want to get better. And, I mean, not just help the linebackers, it's going to help the whole defense, you know, because we all play as one. You know, 11 people, you know, on the same mission to get the job done. And, you know, everybody's going to help everybody out there. And everybody's just excited, you know, to develop this connection with one another and carry it over to training camp.
You and Matt have been together for a long time. How much does that factor in how you play off each other?
Yeah, it factors a lot. You know, obviously, man, 5 years together now, we're going on 5 years. It's a lot. So, I mean, it's a lot of things we learn from each other, a lot of things that we know how each other kind of play a little bit. So, I mean, it's just like talking to my brother, you know what I mean? Obviously, it's only been 5 years, but that's the kind of connection we built with each other, man. We can kind of tell each other anything. Something comes up in the game, he has, you know, we have that good connection that we know what one is thinking. So it makes it a lot easier to make sideline adjustments to how fast the game is going. So, definitely helped me out a lot, definitely helps the defense out a lot, and, you know, I'm excited to, you know, experience this ride with him another time. Yeah, he's definitely good. He's definitely a baller, you know. Obviously, you see good things at an early stage of his career, and he's moving around well. He's making plays on the ball. Actually made a good play yesterday. You know, he had an interception, and, you know, I picked with him a little bit because we got a little linebacker competition going on. But, you know, that's just guys just want to make each other better and, you know, guys just, you know, holding each other accountable. But definitely see, you know, good early sparks from him, and he's going to be a good player. Yeah, I take my hat off to him, man, and I can't thank him enough just for being here, you know, taking time out of his busy schedule just to come back and just give back, you know, because he doesn't have to do that. And I don't take it for granted. So, you know, every time he's here, I try to get in his head anywhere that I can. You know, obviously, man, he was a great player, played the game at a high level. And, I mean, there's a lot of things you can learn from him. So, you know, any time he's here, I just try to, you know, whatever questions I may have, just shoot it out to him. And even if I don't change my game to how he played it, I could just at least get that in and, you know, have options to, okay, this is how he defended something or this is how he saw something. But, I mean, he's been great and, you know, can't thank him enough.
Linebacker competition that you mentioned with Terrell, who's in the lead?
Oh, yeah, I don't know. We want to keep it with the linebackers, but we are just really competing, to be honest. Yeah, it's just competing.
You know, back together practicing. What's kind of been the mindset with the way last year? Is it kind of motivation? Is it, you know, flush it out of the back of your mind? Just what's kind of been in the last couple weeks here?
Everybody's been motivated. You know, everybody's been motivated. And, I mean, you know, it's a group of, this is a team that doesn't blink, man. I mean, obviously, things wasn't the way we wanted it to be, but, you know, it's a new year. You know, you can't look back in the back, because you look too far in the back, you're going to get stuck going forward. So you got to continue, you know, just to get better, continue to come in every day. And just, you know, it's one mission still. That doesn't change, man. It's another year, and we still got that same mission on our mind.
One major improvement you'd like to see out of yourself going into the tournament?
Just trusting myself. I think it's simple as that.
Oh, yeah. What are you looking forward to from that?
I'm excited. You know, I'm excited. I'm just looking forward to see all the kids out there having a good time. This is, I want to say, our third year doing it now. And, you know, the numbers are just increasing every year. So I'm excited, man, just to go back and give back. You know, I know my brothers have some guys coming. I got a couple guys coming on the team. And, you know, those kids look forward to that. You know, when I was young, I look forward to the older guys coming back, giving back to us. And, you know, anytime I have an opportunity to do that, you know, especially in my hometown, you know, I love to do things like that. So I'm really looking forward to that. I know it's going to be a good one this year.
You mentioned letting go of how the last season ended. You must have talked so much about being able to have an experience like that. What do you think has been the biggest takeaway for these events after the way things
went at the end of the season? Yeah, you got to play until the whistle is blown. I think that's the biggest thing. Like I said earlier, you can't blink. And I think that's just the biggest lesson that we learned. And, you know, we're not so much dwelling on the past now. You know, we're looking forward, and we're excited for the challenge this year.
All right, that's Tremaine Edmonds. And maybe my biggest takeaway from his comments there, when he was asked, what do you need to do to reach another level of play? He said, just trust myself. And so where I think that is rooted is when he sees something on the field, whether it's pre-snap or at the snap, he has to do a better job of believing in what he sees so he can anticipate and make the splash plays that Leslie Frazier is talking about. Too many times, well, I shouldn't say it's a lot. I'm indicating like it's a lot. I don't think it's a lot. But there are times where, based on what he's saying, he just didn't trust what he thought he was seeing enough, and then has to play catch-up on the play. So instead of a 2-yard loss, it's a 4-yard gain maybe on a run play, something like that. So it's going to be interesting to see how he processes all that to put more trust in the film study that he's put in, that he is seeing what he believes he's seeing and reacts accordingly on the field by making a bigger play or more bigger plays than he has in the past. We have to take a break here. Couple more thoughts on the tweet sheet when we return here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, some final thoughts on the tweet sheet from you guys in terms of, is there anyone on the Bills roster that could have a bigger jump in production in 2022 than Gabriel Davis? Aaliyah says, I think Dawson Knox has the potential to really step up even more this year. Another year in the position, more hard work and another round of tight end you can only help. Just depends on Dorsey's vision. That's the key, right? Dorsey's vision. But a jump in production after a 9-touchdown season? I don't know how you top that. Maybe Aaliyah is thinking in terms of receptions and receiving yards, because in the pecking order there, Knox had 49 catches, 587 yards. So maybe that's where she's looking for the increase. But 9 touchdowns, that's going to be tough to top going into year 4 for Dawson Knox. From All Bills All Day, a vote for Groot. He can play every position on the D-line, and based on reports, he's added great weight and now has a player coach and future Hall of Famer Von Miller. Side note, Terrell Bernard will be the difference in KC. Rush 3, let Mahomes pick a side, then Milano or Bernard pounce. See Cincinnati in the second half of the AFC Championship game. Okay, I'll do that, but I like the Rousseau pick. I think he could have a big year, and yeah, he will move around. And finally, Paul says Isaiah McKenzie has had great production when given the opportunity in prior seasons. Give him more this year and good things will happen. His speed will be a mismatch problem for defenses. I like the McKenzie pick too. Good job on the tweet sheet today, folks. We're back tomorrow with more when I will be joined by WROC-TV sports director Thad Brown from Rochester. We'll see you tomorrow at 1 p.m.